This is Thought Crime. I'm your host, Wesley Fox, editor of PrescientSciFi.com. For this episode 51, I've been talking about it for 2 months, and now it's here. This is the review of Ghost in the Shell. There will be no beer on this one. I'm recording this a little bit earlier in the day. I normally record at night. This time, I only had a little bit of time in the afternoon to get this done. I wanted to get this done today and not put this off until later in the week when I had time at night. I want to do reviews a little bit, like maybe only 3 days after the premiere, 4 days after the premiere, something like that, and not kind of put them, you know, just trying to work product-wise, do a little bit better than before. So this is a little bit early for a beer, so I'm going to have to skip that part, unfortunately. Next time, maybe I'll drink two. I don't know. Make up for it. But so let's go quickly to the movie. Ghost in the Shell is supposed to be in the near future in Japan. It's about the Major, the first of her kind. And I'm just going to read straight off IMDb. A human saved from a terrible crash who is cyber-enhanced to be a perfect soldier devoted to stopping the world's most dangerous criminals. That's Scarlett Johansson's character, the Major. She's part of Section 9? Section 6 or 9? I can't remember. But a section of the Japanese Defense Ministry. This all takes place in maybe the 2030s or 2040s. Cyber enhancement is common. Everyone gets something, you know, kind of a way of, you know, it's kind of like accessories now, like makeup or, you know, boob jobs or spray tans or, you know, whatever, you know, clothing, you know, it's just considered something you do. But usually it's aesthetic. Some soldiers get enhancements for their eyes, things like that to help them better. But the Major is different in that the entire body is a robot. It's entirely cybernetic. Robots are around in this future, but they're, you know, obviously they're robots. They're just androids or gynoids for the female ones, if you want to call them. Or gynoids or gynoids. I don't know. How do you pronounce that word? But anyway, so she is the first that is a human brain and a human consciousness, or ghost, put into a cyborg or a robot, the shell. Hence the name Ghost in the Shell. The movie, the original movie is from 1995. It was an anime film, but it was based on a comic book that was extremely popular in the 80s and 90s, I think. I never read any of them. I did see the movie, and I did watch the cartoons based on the movie on Adult Swim, Cartoon Network. So I'm not like the hardcore fan, I'm not a fanatic, but I do love the show. I did like the movie a lot. I thought touches on some very cool things. So I was really psyched. I thought this could have been a very special movie. And for them to get Scarlett Johansson, who, you know, there was that controversy around them casting a white woman to play a Japanese character, and also to have, you know, a fair number of, let us say, Caucasians in this movie, rather than Japanese actors and actresses. I'll skip over that just to simply say that if you could have found a Japanese actress of equal caliber to Scarlett Johansson, I would have said go with that, but really, I just don't think there was one. But there's also another reason I think they went with Scarlett Johansson, and unfortunately, after seeing the movie, I understand it now after I've seen the movie. That's the problem. They needed the boost. This movie needed a boost. And so I think they went out and got Scarlett Johansson to give them that boost. They needed Black Widow. They really did. I'll go through the fundamentals of who made this movie. The director is Rupert Sanders, whose only real credit that is of any relevance or any kind of impress of any kind is Snow White and the Huntsman, which, even if you like Snow White and like fantasy movies, is a terrible movie. So you're bringing in a director that has virtually no background in science fiction. You know, his only claim to fame was a B or C fantasy movie with Kirsten Stewart. You know, congratulations. The writers are William Wheeler, Jamie Moss, and Erin Kruger. So I was trying to figure out, you know, all right, the director's not a big deal. Well, that means something, but that's not like the whole story. So I looked at the writers. Obviously, the movie is based on the original film that was written by a Japanese writer. William Wheeler, the first writer that did this one, his claim to fame was Queen of Katwe. He did 3 episodes of Ray Donovan and 2 episodes of Empire. And a bunch of other things I didn't recognize. So that's it. So William Wheeler, he has some credits to his name. He's been around for a while, but nothing really, you know, that I would say is could be, you know, great, great special stuff and is really a high profile, you know, the guy you would want on this kind of movie. The next guy, Jamie Ross. He hasn't done anything of relevance if you go to his IMDb site. Aaron Kruger's has helped write the Transformer movies and Brothers Grimm, and as well as a few other kind of lower level projects. So Aaron Kruger's basically helped write a couple fantasy, Brothers Grimm, and some Michael Bay movies, which don't really require writing. I mean, this was the team they put together for this. This is not exactly an all-star crew. And there's nothing in their backgrounds to suggest they know jack shit about anime or jack about the source material, about the themes of the source material, which is identity, consciousness, sexual identity, gender identity, AI. I mean, this is all heady stuff. And there's just nothing in any of their backgrounds to suggest they have any clue what they're doing. Because this is not just an action movie. I mean, if it seems pretty clear that that's the approach the production company took, that this is going to be a cool movie where they could put Scarlett Johansson in the front fighting robots. They didn't really, and they followed the original movie pretty closely, and they, not closely, I'm sorry, but they used the original anime movie from 1995 as kind of their basis, and then they tried to build a live action movie with a few extra things here and there. But in the end, they just made an action movie, and they just ignored the themes, the very things that kind of make Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, and some of the other things really, really special and really deep and interesting. And why that magazine, like why those movies and why those comics have like this hardcore fan base. It's not a huge fan base, but they're pretty serious, and it was big enough to justify this movie. But not really, you know, it's not like Marvel, it's not like the Avengers, it's not like X-Men, but still, it had more than enough of a fan base, and they're very committed, and they love this stuff for some very, very good reasons. The people who made this movie, I don't think understood that. Because what they made was a movie that just kind of goes through the motions of the original anime film, throw in some nice special effects, throw in Scarlett Johansson, and they think they got a winner. They didn't. This movie was a total disappointment. Well, not total. It was a disappointment. I'll keep the word total off of it. For me, as somebody who likes Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, this movie was a disappointment. And it looks like, financially, critically, and virtually every other way, this movie is a disappointment in virtually every way. Let me talk a little bit about why the first movie was like considered a classic. Came out in 1995, and it was a combination of animation and some computer-generated effects. It was a Japanese-British collaboration. And it's considered like one of the pivotal anime films. It was like one of the first really great anime films. Before that, you know, anime before that was basically just shorter kind of episodic cartoons. I know they made some movies before that, but this was the first one that really like kind of stood head and shoulders above the rest. It felt like a real movie. It felt like a full real movie, not just a 2-hour cartoon. It was the visuals were considered top notch for their time, and just a really big step forward for what anime usually did before that. And really, the style of it, the feel of it, the kind of sterile robots walking around, the kind of hyper urban setting. The you know it's near future, but it's not so far that you're in spaceships. And so it kind of gave especially in cyberpunk and the people who love to work with computers and AI in their stories, it is known to have made an impression on the Wachowskis, the people, the two who made the Matrix trilogy, and a number of other movie makers and writers since then. It's kind of a piece of a cyberpunk in that sense as well. And then for it to also, a lot of people will talk about the movie is, about the anime film, is its approach to sex and gender identity. There's a scene, the very first scene in the first couple scenes in Ghost in the Shell. It's just like in the current movie, in the live action movie, it shows the major being assembled. The robot, the brain put in and everything. Except in the anime version, she has a female body. She's nude, she has breasts, nipples, a semblance of female genitals, although she doesn't actually have any sexual organs. Obviously, she's a robot. And the assembly, that was like considered like a very cool opening to the movie, showing her being put together, and then showing her in action jumping off the top of a building with her cloaking system that turns her invisible. I mean, these were all very, very cool things that people had really not seen in a movie like that before. Saying it out loud now to somebody in 2017, it's not nearly as impressive or groundbreaking. Keep in mind, this original movie was 1995. And the movie presents the Major, a female lead, who is a badass, ultimate badass through the whole movie. But she's not a damsel in distress. She has no sex drive. She has no sex identity. She's not attracted to men or women. She's not attracted to anyone. Her gender identity, technically, she's not really a woman. She has no reproductive organs. She doesn't menstruate. She just looks like a woman. And I think that was the other really interesting kind of approach here, that she is a robot, but she is also a beautiful woman, like, on the surface. And so it's kind of the first take of what's going to happen if we do start cyber-enhancing ourselves to the point of no longer, you know, what makes us human? You know, is the reproductive act, the capability of reproducing, at the very core? Is it just, you know, is it just the appearance of gender, the appearance of having sexuality? Is that all that is really required? Or so those were the kind of things, the discussions. Also, having a female lead in that era wasn't groundbreaking necessarily, but it was unusual. And I think the Major in particular is a very unusual female lead. And even now, I think we don't have that many. And they also tend to fall within certain categories. Actually, Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow fits in that category. She very rarely is ever in real serious trouble. She's out there alone, working alone, and she uses her appearance to her benefit, but really her only real love interest ended up being the Hulk, and wasn't a typical, obviously not a normal love relationship. So actually, using Scarlett Johansson made a lot of sense in that respect. But that's what made the first movie special. The Major made the movie special, the visuals, the kind of the themes it approached, the fact that it was an anime, a sourced out of anime, and it became a favorite right away. All right, so that's 1995's movie. Now we fast forward to 2017. Visually, there's 15, 20 movies a year that have CGI and just amazing visuals. I mean, we've had a couple already this year. The anime being turned into a movie, that's now been done many, many times in the last 25 years. And it's been done to varying degrees of success. Some are great, some are not. So those two things, no longer really, you know, those two things are taken away. The third thing, female lead. Female leads have gradually become more common than they were in 95. So those are like three things that made the first movie great that if you remake it are no longer true. So this movie is not groundbreaking in any way. You take away the groundbreaking facet of it, what do you have? You have basically just a hollow movie that's a recreation of a great one. So what were they trying to accomplish? What do you do? I mean, we have reboots and remakes all the time. So what makes this one so problematic? There was nothing this movie offered to make itself distinct. Its visuals are no better than, you know, they're interesting, they're beautiful, and the music in the movie is actually really nice and kind of fits with a little bit of the aura to some extent. But this movie doesn't bring anything new of itself. It's basically kind of a copy of the original movie with some changes here and there. It's just not that special compared to all the other movies that come out each year. The summer blockbusters, you know, the Avenger movies, you know, The Matrix came out soon after the anime film, and The Matrix is now 14 years old. So robots, you know, in movies, we've been having some pretty impressive robots in movies for a while now. The AI technology in this movie, like, you felt like you've seen it before. You've seen it done just as well in other movies. The things like, you know, the bionic eyes that Bato gets. We've seen them before. LaForge had them. You know, I mean, so even like some of the elements, the very, very cool things about Ghost in the Shell, you can't use those to impress your audience anymore. And that, I felt like that's what this movie was trying to do. They were trying to use all the great things about the original, thinking that they could impress an audience in 2017 the way they did in 95, make it live action and put in Scarlett Johansson, and that'll do it. It doesn't work. It's been 22 years. The quality and the just the universe of science fiction, of AI movies, of cyberpunk has grown since then. You can't just take and make the same movie, just switch it to live action 22 years later and expect to do well. And I really, it was a disappointment that they could not put their own spin on this. They couldn't put their own brand on this, or own like their own signature on this Ghost in the Shell to make it 2017 Ghost in the Shell. They seem to just take things off the shelf, you know, the elements off the shelf, some of the dialogue, some of the scenes, and just put it in live action. It just didn't feel like there was anything about itself that was, it belonged to this movie, and only to this movie. And it also made a mistake that comic book movies have made from time to time, that X-Men has made from time to time. They rely on the audience's familiarity with the source material for this movie to work. If you know nothing about Ghost in the Shell, this movie is not going to be very good. You might like it. It might be a decent enough movie, and maybe it'll be worth the $10 to you. But to really get everything out of this movie, you need to know something about the source material. I just don't understand how somebody who had never heard of it could go see this movie and like it that much. Some might, but no one's going to give this thing 5 stars. I would be really hard pressed to think of who would be overly impressed to give this 5 stars without knowing the source. So obviously this is fan. So this movie has this feel of just straight fan service. The fan, you know, we thought, hey, it'd be cool if those Ghost in the Shell fans see a live action version of their favorite movie. That's not really a good way to go. Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. You have to know something about the superheroes, about the universe and everything, to really get everything out of that movie. The Easter eggs, some of the scenes, some of the dialogue. I mean, you just can't. It's hard to enjoy that movie without knowing something about those superheroes and the comic books and Frank Miller and Zack Snyder. That was one of the problems with that movie. And that's my other example. You can't. If you really want to extend yourself to a broader audience beyond the core fan base of a source, you know, comic book or whatever, you need to make it consumable and not make it necessary for the audience member to know something about it. That's what makes the Avenger movie so great. You don't have to know anything about Avenger comic books, and you can still love those movies. You still enjoy them to a high extent. Maybe, yeah, you miss a few things here and there, but it's not necessary. Some of the Easter eggs and some of the little things there. Yeah, maybe you miss a joke or two or a comment or two, but you don't need to know. Like, you can love those movies without knowing that. You don't need to be an Iron Man fanatic to love Iron Man movies. And I think that's a mistake that certain comic book films have made, and it's why they've fallen on their face a little bit. I think this is one of the reasons this movie failed. And it did, and I think we're only 4 days in, but I think it's pretty clear this movie's going to be a bomb. I think that's exactly where it's heading. I think I checked earlier today, I think it only made $19 million its first weekend out. 19. Whereas every Marvel and DC movie makes well over 50, 60, 70 million dollars. Some of them go up over 100 million. And at the top end, Star Wars Force Awakens, I think, made almost 200 million its first weekend. So 19 million, that's barely half of what a regular, you know, summer action movie makes in its first weekend. It made 40 or 50 million or something in foreign markets. That's really also not really an amazing number. It didn't have a huge budget. I think it says here the budget was like $120 million to make the movie. So it doesn't need to make Batman or Iron Man kind of money to be successful, but 19 million. I mean, 60 million total in its first weekend worldwide. I mean, that's bad. And then you combine that with the user ratings it's getting. Rotten Tomatoes has it somewhere around only 63% liked it. 63 is not where you want to be. The average rating is 3.5. That is awful for a movie of this caliber. The critics were under, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes average, I think, was 42%. Those are critics. Critics, obviously, underwhelmed by the movie. So this is a bomb. I think they failed. They didn't. They had a wonderful idea. There's a wonderful story here. There's something that a lot of movies skip on. We don't get a lot of cyberpunk movies. We get a lot of action movies. We get a lot of science fiction and fantasy and special effects and beautiful visuals and all sorts of cool comic stuff. But very rarely do we don't get that much cyberpunk. And when we do, a lot of it, you know, some of it falls on its face really fast and doesn't do that well. Others, maybe it's not easy to make. Maybe more of a core group, but I mean, maybe it's more of a modest fan base for cyberpunk. But I really think you could have done something really special here with Ghost in the Shell and opened up cyberpunk again, and they just did not. They just failed. This is a disappointment, and I'm just so about it. This didn't have to happen. You could have made this movie. I mean, remakes in general have some drawbacks to it because you're always compared to the original and the classic. And some people, when they see something for the first time, there's an emotional kind of connection to it. And in your memory, there's an emotional kind of, you kind of nostalgically remember how you felt when you saw that movie when you were younger. It was the first time you saw something like that. So to see a remake, you cannot recreate that emotional bond. It's not easy. Some movies can do it, but most of the time fans will just say, it's not as good as the original. And what they're meaning to say is they're not getting the emotional reaction and attachment to it they did to the original. You can't recreate that by just simply making the movie again with some, whether animate a live action or you're just remaking the movie with a new set of actors. Like, it's hard to recapture that feeling you had when you first saw it. So knowing that, you don't just you need to put something of yourself. You need to put something in that movie that isn't in the original. There's got to be something to it that is standout, and it's something that's going to appeal to a 2017 audience. They didn't do that. They put some new things in this movie, but none of it stands out with a 2017 audience. I mean, they borrowed a few things from the cartoon and from the series and put it in that weren't even in the original movie here and there. So it's like, what made you think you could get this anywhere near the same reaction from people if this is all you were going to do? And this is why it's not the first remake to fall on its face, and other remakes and reboots have not done well, so it's not the first one, but you'd figure when you make mistakes in the past, you'd learn from it. Hollywood, or whoever these production companies are that put all this together, the writers, the directors, all of them, all the way down, they have not learned from history. They have not learned from past mistakes. It doesn't even need to be your mistakes. You can learn from other people's mistakes and other movies and whatever. These people didn't learn. If you would have told me what this movie was like, sat down with me before the movie was released, I would have told you this movie's a mistake. You need to try again. You need to go back to the drawing board. Don't do that. That's not going to work. Putting Scarlett Johansson in the movie is not going to save it for you. Actors don't save movies. They don't. If you don't believe, you have to check. Like Tom Cruise, for example, biggest action star there is, arguably, in the world today. They've put him in movies that have fallen flat on their face. Oblivion fell flat on its face. Will Smith was a huge star for years and years and years. They put him in that After Earth movie. Fell flat on its face. Putting an A-list star at the top of the billing and putting him all over the cover and basically trying to center the movie on them is not, you can't ride that. It doesn't work. You're just as like, if you don't do any of your other work to make it a great movie, Tom Cruise can't save a bad movie. Will Smith can't save a bad movie. Scarlett Johansson cannot save a bad movie. As you can tell, I feel strongly about this. My disappointment, if you've listened to the last few Thought Crime shows, you know how I feel about Ghost in the Shell, how excited I was, and really was thinking this could have done something great. And then to see this, it hurts. It just hurts. This is the biggest disappointment movie-wise. This is the biggest disappointment I've had in a long time. It's just, it hurts. It just hurts. So, all right, I'm gonna take a little breath here. Let's see if I can get back on track. All right, one of the other problems with why this movie, and again, I'm going to touch on the original actually quite a bit here, So instead of, I'm going to try and talk about both movies, and if I jump between the 95 and 2017 version, I'm going to try and speak straight and not confuse you. So, but I might do that from here and there. But so let's talk about the 95 version a little bit more, and then I'll try to just stick to the 2017. But as I said earlier in the show, the original film, a lot of the talk and the reception to the film afterwards was about its exploration of gender and sexual identity. Now, did the movie itself actually focus on that, like with dialogue and with scenes and things like that? Maybe not so much. There's really not a whole lot of dialogue on the major's lack of gender and sexual identity. It's implied, though, with the very first scenes of seeing a female body assembled as a machine, and then seeing her move in action and seeing how men respond to her and how she's utterly cold and non-responsive. The fact that she has no problem with nudity whatsoever. Why? I mean, she has no modesty. Because it's not really, it's a robotic body. It's not her body. So she knows how to use it. She's a robot. But, I mean, flashing her robot boobs and getting stared at, she has no concern about that whatsoever. There's no embarrassment. And why should she be? The body's basically perfect. So it's another reason that she's probably not too antsy about it. Also, she's a trained soldier and a weapon. Her concern is getting the job done, and she's extremely good at it. So if wearing a dress, and she did this in the cartoon, wearing a dress and having some, you know, rich Japanese businessman or American, you know, grope her ass, you know, she'll stay in character because she's able to numb everything on the externals of the robotic body. And they actually mention that in the movie as well, that she's asked, you know, how do you feel? And she immediately responds, I don't feel anything. Like, I don't feel this body. This body's a shell. I don't, it's not skin. This is not my skin. You know, these are not my boobs. This is not, you know, this is just a shell. So when she's in undercover as, you know, some arm candy at some big event in the cartoon, for example, you know, she doesn't even feel, she barely feels or doesn't feel at all like some businessman trying to grope her ass. You know, most women would be appalled and embarrassed and infuriated by it. She didn't give a shit. She's trying to get into the ball, and she's trying to get this guy's attention to learn something about what he's doing. So these little things like that are of just no concern to her. Of course, the humans around her are kind of react more to it than she does. The 95 movie, I don't remember really any scenes doing that. I think the cartoon did it a lot more than the movie actually did. But I could be wrong. It's been a while since I've seen the movie. But, I mean, it's more about you seeing her body and seeing it, you know, not... You know, the men, like Bato, will sometimes react to it like she's a woman and try to cover her up, or will look away when she's changing. She doesn't react to it that way at all. And also the fact that she's unable to reproduce, obviously. It's a robot. She has only fractured memories of her past, so she doesn't have a lot of what the experiences of being a human girl or human woman in her life before she became the major. So, that's what the original movie kind of... respond, like that's the reaction it elicited in a lot of people afterwards. This movie will not get that reaction because, one, that movie, like the movie that got that reaction was already made 22 years ago. You can't do that again unless you bring something else to it that's relevant to today's audience. What's the big thing nowadays? It's LGBT, it's sex changes, it's things like that. It's centering on sexual identity and gender identity. That's usually what gets a lot of attention now. So to make a movie about the utter absence of those kinds of identities, I mean, you're clashing with it. So how do you get people to care about the absence of gender and sex identity when in fact that seems to be the thing that a lot of people are fixated on now? And that's what the discussions are on LGBT rights, on what, you know, assuming gender or, you know, being, having the right to, you know, choose your own gender, choose your own bathroom, et cetera, et cetera. So this movie would fly in the face of that. And it's really, that could have been interesting if they could have found some way to pull that in to the movie, the attitude towards gender that we are familiar with today, and put it in the movie somehow. They didn't. At least in no way I could see. And the idea of consciousness, this movie, the new one, the 2017 one, does approach on consciousness and memory and what it means to be human, but it does so in just a very clunky and predictable way. The And by the way, actually, let me back up before we get into that consciousness. Back to the sex and gender identity thing. I actually was trying to think of any scenes in the movie that touched on that. And there's a couple scenes where Bato is kind of looking away when she's changing, but I mean, for the most part, he doesn't really seem to react to her in any real attractive, you know, as a man to a woman kind of way. It's much more sterile. It's much more professional. So you don't. So that dynamic never plays out in the new movie. And also, when she's kind of exploring what it is to be human or a woman, she spends, you know, 30 seconds with a prostitute, and touches her lips and asks what it feels like. It's a 30-second scene and it's done. That is the extent of what this movie does on this particular theme. Another mistake I feel this movie made, and it's a mistake that other movies have made with different characters, but I've seen the movie, I've seen the show, I have not read the comics, but from what I have seen of the Major, she is not a damsel in distress. She is a badass. She is the most effective soldier and weapon they have. That's who she is. That's who she's supposed to be. She's the ultimate weapon. This movie does not depict her as the ultimate weapon. She is in constant danger, peril, in need of saving. Confusion. She's restrained. Like in three or four. She's like restrained or otherwise in some sort of imprisonment three or four times in this movie. And needs to break away or needs somebody to help break her out. You know, it's... And the kind of crying in pain and the things like that. That's not part of this character, or it's not supposed to be. That's not who this character's supposed to be. This is not supposed to be one of these like strong female characters that turns out not being a strong female character. I mean, and the saving is done by the villain, who they call Kusei. It's done by Bato in one scene. It's done by the Dr. Ule in another scene. So she's basically saved by everyone else, and maybe only in one or two instances bothers to save anyone else. She saves Bato in one scene. So this is not really, it's a quote-unquote strong female character that isn't really all that strong and is basically often used in the way female characters are used throughout movie history. Damsel in distress. That was a big mistake. I think they should have tried a lot harder to only put her in those situations. For this story, I understand you kind of had to because of her kind of realization. She had to be in some sort of compromised situation at least once. But she was in a compromised situation four or five times in almost every step of this movie. That's not what you do. This is a bad idea. Totally mistook the character, and this is not the Major I know. Like, when I saw the movie, by the end of the movie, I'm like, I don't know who Scarlett Johansson was playing, but that's not the Major I know. The Major I know is not in constant need of saving. As for some of the other themes that were measured in this movie or examined, I mean, it's all stage one thinking. You know, the dialogue is, there's no subtlety. There's no kind of insight whatsoever. It's all blunt stage one talking. It's almost like if, you know, instead of, it's like the mistake that first-time authors make is instead of showing you something, they tell you something. That's what it said. Show, don't tell. So like example would be like in books where they explain something, a bit of a relationship between two people, rather than just demonstrating it through their actions and dialogue with one another. They want, instead of just directly telling somebody like this person is angry at this person, you should show them sneering at them or ignoring them or, you know, rolling their eyes, you know, something like that. That's the example on the writer's side. In the movie side, if you wanted to explore something as deep and complex as gender identity or human identity or consciousness, you can't just have people making little short comments about it and then moving on to the next gunfight. So all stage one, all blunt, no subtlety. There was nothing novel or particularly insightful in this movie. In fact, some of the dialogue felt like it came from other movies I've already seen. Enough bashing. Let's see if I can say a couple things nice about this movie. The visuals of Tokyo and of Japan and what I saw in the scenes and some of the other things were very cool. The visuals, the music is very cool. The music kind of has its kind of a feel and aura onto itself, I thought was very cool. It's not typical action movie drums pounding kind of thing. I thought that was cool. So some of the atmosphere of the movie is got kind of a unique kind of style to it, which I thought was very, very cool, but not enough to save it. But that part, I think they did well. Casting, throwing the controversy aside, and in the end, I think that, like I said, I think the reason they picked ScarJo is because they knew that they wanted a boost from an A-list star. Scarlett Johansson's like one of the four or five biggest actresses right now, and Black Widow, as Black Widow in Marvel, you know, she's a recognized action star. But the rest of the cast is relatively unknown. I don't think any of them are recognizable. None of them really did a particularly great job in this movie either. So they obviously brought in ScarJo to save it. I mean, they didn't spend any money on the rest of the casting, and they didn't do it. I mean, and this cast really didn't have much to work with. So even if they are great, it would be hard to know because none of the scenes required them to do that much. The only actor that really had to do any kind of work was Bato, the guy who played Bato. And then, of course, Scarlett Johansson. And Scarlett Johansson does a tremendous job with what they give her. You know, the dialogue, the scenes. She kind of hunches forward and moves in a very, like, really just... It is robotic. She moves in a robotic way. She's not really agile. She's not, like, what's it called? Graceful at all. Her posturing is a forward posture, that of, engagement, you know, with her gun drawn. When she's looking at people, she kind of leans into them a little bit and kind of looks at them with this flat expression. You know, her facial expressions are all very blank and robotic. You know, it's even the way she hits people. I mean, it's all just kind of work. It seems like a robot's doing it. So she did a tremendous job with that. She definitely sold me on being the Major in a lot of ways. I don't think the writing sold me that was the Major, but I think ScarJo basically did. I think the biggest problem with the movie was the dialogue and the actual scenes and the actual screenplay. It wasn't ScarJo. So in terms of casting, they didn't make any mistakes. I don't think you could have taken a Japanese actress, put her in there, or put more Japanese actors and actresses in there, and that would have made the movie better. It wouldn't have. It wouldn't have made a difference. This movie would not have done any better with that. I don't buy that for a second. The script and everything else in it was just not going to get them anywhere. So the controversy becomes kind of moot. To sum up, Ghost in the Shell was an utter disappointment. If the original did not exist, if this was just a brand new movie and not a remake, I think it would have done a little better, but not much. I don't think this movie had enough going for it. And also with the competition it's in, with other movies that have been out lately. Logan, actually, it got beat by, I think, Beauty and the Beast and Boss Baby, you know, some cartoon. I mean, the competition is just so strong out there for theater, you know, for people spending $12, $14 on a ticket. There's the X-Men movies, the Marvel movies, there's, you know, all sorts of things out there. And of course, there's the Star Wars. You know, people are getting, we're spoiled. I mean, we're getting pretty spoiled. We're still going to movies, but you know, we never come out like it's only once in a while we come out truly blown away, but we're still going to these movies. But this movie just did not have enough to stand out. The critics did not think it stood out. The teasers and trailers did give it some buzz, but I just don't I think they needed more. I mean, they needed to do something leading into the movie. They needed to obviously change the movie in a number of ways. They just thought they could make I think they just thought they could put something like this together and it'll succeed because of the original, and that was a bad idea. They made a number of classic mistakes that Hollywood has made with science fiction, cyberpunk, and AI. They just cannot look at it in any thoughtful way. They just borrow dialogue and ideas off the shelf from movies that are decades old. That's what they did here. They couldn't really explore a single new idea in this movie. They never tried, and if they did, it just did not come through at all. I always open up the possibility that maybe I missed something in the movie the way I saw it, and I know I do miss things just like everyone else. So if there was some of this going on in the movie, I didn't get it. And from what I've read, a vast majority of critics and viewers did not get it. So, you know, I was really hoping this one would kind of get me back, you know, really, you know, Logan did get me back in a lot of ways. I liked Logan a lot. I thought this movie would kind of wake up the classic science fiction nerd at me, you know, technology, the future, AI, consciousness, gender. I mean, there's all sorts of cool things in this source material. I thought this thing could really awaken like the raw, hardcore, hard science fiction fan in me. It failed. It just utterly failed. Okay, so what's next? What is the next movie I'm going to bash? Well, there's not really any high-profile movies in April for science fiction or even, you know, comic books or whatever. There's a couple indie movies that are available online on demand. I might review one of those, or I might just write a review, so I don't think that'll be on Thought Crime. So that in terms of movies, you probably the next one will not be on a movie. TV-wise, we do have The Walking Dead finale, which I might discuss with John. There's also the Star Wars Rebels finale. I saw it a couple weeks ago. I was just kind of meh on the whole season 3 of Star Wars Rebels. I liked the final seasons of Clone Wars better. I think Rebels is kind of meandering and not going anywhere. I have not Humans on AMC. I have not finished that yet, although so I'm like a whole season behind on that. I am watching Expanse and Colony. I don't know if I'm going to do a show on that. I am going to be watching American Gods, which is actually already started. And Handmaid's Tale, which will be on Hulu. So there's some TV coming up. I haven't decided if I'm going to do a show on that yet. There is, of course, the movie Life, which I have yet to see. And from what everyone's told me, I don't want to see it. So that's what goes up on there. In terms of book reviews, I might actually do something on a book before I do any TV or movie things. I did a revisiting of 1984, and I've decided, you know what, maybe I should just do some shows on some classic novels. So I'm thinking that I'm going to reread Brave New World and maybe do a Brave New World Revisited episode here in the month of April. That's probably a couple weeks away because I actually have to sit down and reread it, and my read list is a little long right is a little occupied right now. So I guess just to sum up, I have no idea what the next show will be on. It might be 2 weeks. It might be next weekend. I don't know yet, but I will just have to leave it there for now. I am sorry for all of you that saw Ghost in the Shell and are probably, you know, cried afterwards. I was deeply disappointed, and hopefully Hollywood does better with the next one, or the next sci-fi, well, whatever. I mean, whatever they're doing, do better next time, because you didn't do this one right, and I hope they learn some lessons from this. Learn some lessons from their failures, for Christ's sake. But anyway, that'll do it for me. Thank you for listening to me talk to myself, and until next time.